across the nation for their continued support of the Los Alamitos Racecourse. Opening day, Friday, December 4th. Watch and wager on exciting Southern California thoroughbred racing. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
Man, what's the matter with you? Don't you know it's Christmas?
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There you go, and Deja is on the board today, and of course, Casey's longtime broadcast partner, Deja making an executive decision and kicking off the ATR Christmas music, and what a great start, Stone Soul Christmas. Binky grip tight, out of this world. Good job, Case, Deja. Well done. Good start to something we look forward to. Why not? Why not? It's December. We're going to be off actually 2 full weeks. I promised Casey that we didn't take a mid season. We didn't take our usual week, June, end of June, beginning of July. So we're going to, looks like the 21st, the weeks of the 21st and 28th will take off. So that gives us call it 13 broadcast days to give you our quite fabulous Christmas music collection. Christmas music you don't hear everywhere else. That's the way we approach it. And you know what else you don't hear anywhere else? Sid Fernando. Sid. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Steve. Yeah, that's for sure. You have the exclusive on me here.
Well, and we don't think we don't appreciate it. And the opportunity to do our pedigree focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. And before we dive into any discussion, how was Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was, my wife and I here in Brooklyn, yeah. But it was great.
It was such a weird,
We actually went out to a restaurant, and we were the only
did
people
you really?
At the restaurant.
Wow.
And we ate outside, too, so it was nice.
Wow. Was it a Thanksgiving style dining?
No,
or
no.
Just a regular night out.
Yeah, in Brooklyn, it's called Terra, and I recommend it to anybody in Park Slope. But we just got on a walk, and we got hungry, and it was the only place that was open. Kind of pricey, but it's good. And they have a backyard dining area. It was a really nice day, the weather-wise. But they had eaters in there, too. And it turned out we were the only people in the backyard, so we were, fully socially distanced. And, it was great.
I love it. That's an option. I think we one time, in fact, the one time that we did an away-from-home Thanksgiving, it was in Florida, and in fact, I can tell you exactly when it was because it was the year that I got introduced to the show. It was 2005, and my mother wanted us to come down to Florida. She was being treated in Palm Beach, and my parents had a place in Boynton, And we had, we went somewhere in Palm Beach with our friend Connie Kaplan, not the Breakers, but it might have been like a Four Seasons. It was pretty funny. It was a Thanksgiving dinner, but it was like two slices of turkey, three Brussels sprouts. There was like a little rondelle of potato. It was it was like something avant-garde. You were ready for seconds about 20 minutes later. that's the only away from home Thanksgiving I can
and how was your recall. Thanksgiving? You had some family there and you were cooking, as I recall.
I cooked I'm sort of a creature of habit, and so I couldn't adjust my portion control, and so I made food for 14, and there was four of us. There was Tina and I, and Spencer and his roommate who's from France, Anya, and she's marooned a little bit in New York. I mean, she works and she's on track to be a citizen, but she works for a transnational company, and so it was just the four of us, and I made food for an army.
Oh, you had leftovers.
Oh my God! I finally actually I think I pretty much finally am down. I did have to make a second cranberry mold, the Jell-O mold for Tina. This happens every year. She'll have the Jell-O mold for days afterward, and then ask me to make another one, and then she'll be tired of it for 11 months. But so I had to make one of those extra one yesterday. But otherwise, I think we finally I made a soup. I took the carcass and made the soup was fabulous. And not only did I make turkey soup, I only had one bag of egg noodles, and so we got rid of the egg noodles in about a day on Saturday, I think. And Sunday I made a batch of matzo balls. We did it right. I don't mess around when it comes to this.
Yeah.
This
no, I know you're really good with food. One of the things that I miss on Twitter was your traveling restaurant show. All the restaurants you hit.
Right now we're that show's on hiatus right now. We haven't got even, I'm actually surprised. Tina has got, I say to her, every couple of weekends I've said, do you want to go into Saratoga? Do you want to go to Albany, Detroit? And she's like, no, she has no desire to eat inside a restaurant right now. Even though we both have had it, we were commenting on this last night, with the news of how the vaccine is going to be distributed. And I looked at her and I said, in the scheme of things, I think the fact that we got it in March, right when it was hitting, yeah. And plus the news from, I don't know if people saw this, but a couple of weeks ago, there's a series of studies around the world that basically are determining that once you have it, you've got an immunity for an extended period is what they're concluding. And the information from these individual research projects is all coming to the same conclusion. And so I don't know. I said to Tina, I said, I think, we were better off getting this when we did, because we're nervous for friends and relatives that are secluded and continue to be, taking every precaution. And we, not that we aren't taking precautions still, but my confidence level about doing things is, I went to Kentucky twice. I went to Breeders' Cup and to Derby without an issue.
Yeah, when you had it, how bad was it?
It was, you know, 20 days. It took me 20 days to get rid of it, and I didn't miss a show, but I had a, you know, pounding headache each day, and you know, achy. I slept 16 hours a day for 20 days, literally 3 weeks of muturing, kind of like, you know, chest hurt a little. Mostly it was the headache and you know, losing the sense of taste.
Tina. That's a giveaway, right?
Yeah. Well, and when that happened, when I said to Tina one night, you know, 3 days into it, we got it because I was insistent on going to the Colgate Boston University Patriot League championship game like an idiot. And Tina said to me, this was like March 16th, and Tina said, "Do you really think we should be going to this?" I said, can't be many problems. That was on a Wednesday. And by Saturday night, I said, "I don't feel great." And Sunday, I was like, you know, like a goldfish out of the bowl.
Wow.
She lost the sense of smell, and it's taken 5 months to get it back.
Holy smoke.
Yep. It's only in the last month that, you know, from March till about the end of October, it's only in November where she is saying, "Oh, you know, I can smell, you know, I can smell your cologne," for instance. You know, she would check to see, you know, if I was wearing cologne, and for months on end, she said, "I can't smell anything." That was like our test. It's an insidious thing, and the people that are vulnerable, and then, you know, who knows, you know, you're reading about the people that are having, you know, the mini strokes and, you know, the other things. It's just, it's scary. And the people that are being oblivious are just, you're just being foolhardy. It's crazy.
That's crazy.
Now, the end is at least in sight, and you applaud. I mean, the, you know, the health. Could you imagine the health care? It's enough for those of the people that are being cautious. Can you imagine being in these hospitals, you know, especially now that are just at capacity, and, you know, these nurses and doctors that on a, you know, 7 days a week now for 9 months?
Yeah, I mean, what a group of heroes. I mean, these people put it on the line every day. I mean, it's incredible.
It's just got to see this through. Be a little more vigilant for just a little longer, and we'll get past this. Certainly the industry I said this with Mike Lakow earlier. I mean, the industry deserves high marks because everybody's been pulling in the same direction. And, you know, when we discussed the stud fees, for instance, you know, everybody understanding, and the sales companies have bent over backwards, you know, the tack shops, everybody has been just so cooperative and has boosted everybody, you know, each other. It's really commendable.
Yeah, no, the industry has really worked pretty diligently and, you know, with a sense of purpose to take this thing seriously.
Well, we got to start taking seriously a couple of young sires. How about the results this weekend, Sid, at Churchill, where Frosted and Leoban come away with grade two stake winners, and the Leoban groundwork already in place for the move from New York to Kentucky. Frosted, very quietly has been just, you know, kind of churning out you know, productive horses.
Frosted got his first graded stakes winner, and you know, it really came at the right time for him. You know, very highly regarded son of Tappet, obviously. He's had his stud fee slashed quite a bit this year for 2021. And, he's had quite a few impressive maiden winners. Now that he, you know, gets off the mark with a grade two winner, you kind of expect that, you know, his 3-year-olds will, move forward off this. So it's all a positive sign for him. And, you know, hopefully he ends up, you know, fulfilling the promise that he had, has. And, you know, he's a great individual. Of course, he's got that excellent race record and highlighted by that Met Mile. So he's definitely a horse that I think there are a lot of people that are, you know, pulling for this horse. The Grade 2 winner was an $850,000 horse, too. So, I mean, it's very highly regarded, expensive individual. Alejo Ban started off cheap in New York at Sequel. As everyone knows, he's now come to Windstar, where he's standing for $25,000, and he's very popular. He already had a Grade 1 winner, Simply Ravishing, from his first crop, you know, obviously 2-year-olds this year. And this colt, Keep Me in Mind, was already G1 placed. Now he's a G2 winner. So, you know, he's right there. And for him, as his son of Uncle Mo, Steve, it's, you know, it's a really phenomenal accomplishment for Uncle Mo, with his first group of sons at stud, to come up with not only Alejo Ban, but you have also Windstar, Outwork, and Frosted's barn mate at Darley is Nyquist, who has 2 G1 winners in his first crop, a Breeders' Cup juvenile winner, so he's winner, and the he's going to be the leading freshman sire of the year. That's Nyquist, and, you know, again, phenomenal achievement for 3 sons of Uncle Mo to be right there in the top 5 leading freshmen of the year.
Let's take a look at both of these stake winners and travel column. And, you know, here's Larry Best, who, you know, for all the amusement that is directed toward Best about, you know, the into mischief, fetish and the like, if you add up the success that he's had at this point, it actually kind of justifies his approach. Do you think that's a fair conclusion at this point, Sid?
I think, you know, he's spent a lot of money, and, you know, it's a tough game, but, you know, he's had Cambia Park, he's had the Arch Grade 1 winner. He's had Travel Column. He's had Instagram. He's got, you know, Instagram, the son of Into Mischief, as well as Rowayton. Both are going to stud this year. And Instagram is at TaylorMade, priced at $7,500. I think that's a great price for this horse as a first year horse. And Rowayton, and I think he's in Pennsylvania at Diamond B Farm, Glenn Brock's farm. I think that, you know, that's another great regional program. So he's not only collecting, he's not only buying horses, but he's now branching into the breeding business. Of course, he bought that expensive mare, the Argentine mare, for $5 million the year before. So he's going to have, you know, that breeding stock as well, which he's not only in terms of mares, but also, you know, he's trying to develop some stallions as well. He's buying a lot of mares to support his stallions too. So, you know, I think it's fair to say that, you know, he's starting to get his results.
Well, this filly Frosted out of the Victory Gallop mare, and you know, there's a harmony, of course. I brought this up on Monday, the harmony of having both of these stake winners come out of Victory Gallop mares. I thought that was kind of notable. And you look at this pedigree, Sid, what jumps out at you when you, you know, you look at Swing It, and she herself out of an Our Native mare, Free Ransom, out of the J.O. Tobin mare, Pay the Ransom. And if we look all the way down the tail female, I see the presence of No Home, the Australian horse that Dash Goff's father brought to the United States and made a tremendous, tremendous impact.
Yeah, it's you find a lot of names that you don't normally see in pedigrees in this extended family, as you point out. Not only do you see No Home, who is an excellent stallion here, and continue that line with No Double, but the No Home daughter is Carnuba, the Nelson Bunker Hunt horse. He might have even bred Carnuba. I'm not sure, but of course, bred to J.O. Tobin. He's a horse you never see pretty much in pedigree.
No,
Steve.
Champion
J.O. Tobin. J.O. Tobin was a. He was owned by the Californian, I forget his name right now, but he was the last champion for Noel Merlis, the British trainer. And yeah, Nelson Bunker Hunt did breed Carnuba. And J.O. Tobin came here, of course, known here as upsetting first horse to defeat Seattle Slew. Did not have a really good career at stud. And it's interesting that he appears in this pedigree. And then, of course, Our Native, who was from the same crop as Seattle Secretariat. You know, again, another name you never really see in pedigrees. And then you have Victory Gallop, who stopped the Real Quiet Triple Crown. Again, he's a horse that, got exported to Turkey, but not a big presence either. And so you have this kind of odd pedigree in terms of sires, and of course this particular filly, but by Mr. and Mrs. Bain Welker and Denali Stud was sold at the Fasig Tipton sale at Saratoga for $850,000. So, the price certainly is indicative of, quite a bit. And it's been realized now on the racetrack. And, I don't know who picks horses out for Larry Best, but, he scored here.
He's got, oh gosh, it'll come to me, helping on the bloodstock, on the bloodstock side.
Have you ever had Larry Best on
your show? I asked Larry, I saw Larry, at Saratoga, and, I think he, at first he started to agree, and then he said, the more I think about this, he said, I think I'm going to pass. He said he was worried that he would say some potentially inflammatory things, and he said, you know what, I'm better off keeping a little bit of a lower profile. I think he's probably moved away. That was not this summer, but the summer before, in 2019, and I imagine, you know, that he might be he might have a different feel now. I bet you I could get him back to try to get him on again. I forget what he was concerned. It was around the time of the Saratoga sale, as it happens. It might have been after that Saratoga yearling sale in 2019, and he had, I think he had spent pretty freely there, and I thought I had him. Just when I thought I had him reeled in, he slithered off the hook. So.
Saratoga sale, what year did you say?
19. I'm pretty sure it was last summer.
Oh, so then that was the summer where he bought this filly.
There you go. That's a good point. Good point.
Yeah.
Well, how about the homebred? Let's talk about this sort of a homebred, based on the conversation I had with Tino Diodoro on Monday. Keep Me in Mind. And, you know, here again, this is actually, there's some harmony over and above the Victory Gallop mare, Sid. And this is a little bit of a less intense, inbred pedigree. This is a four generation outcross, but the Victory Gallop mare, and in Leaban as a son of Uncle Mo, you've got the similar profile of Frosted as a son of Tappet. And so, you know, there's some harmony there. Talk a little bit about what's going on this female family, because as it happens, the tail female line here has got some obscurities beyond Victory Gallop. You've got a Silent Screen, Lady Blockbuster as the second dam. You've got a Lieutenant Stevens, and then Reneged. I mean, you've got some obscurities involved in this page.
Oh, those obscurities are similar almost to the other pedigree.
Yeah.
Just shows you the kind of mares that Victory Gallop was actually being bred to. You know, fairly obscure pedigrees. When you look at these two, because both of these two Victory Gallop mares produced these two horses. You know, it's a good cross, Leoban, Uncle Mo with, you know, Fabiano. And, you know, it's some of the stuff, you know, you ultimately have to, you know, not, take your hat off to the stallions involved. In this, in the case of Frosted and Leoban, and you know the depth of some of these families too, but you know they're not your typical, as you point out, they're not your typical type of commercial pedigrees. I mean, this horse was actually bred by Southern Equine Stables,
right?
It's. It is kind of a homebred, isn't it?
Well, Diodoro explained. I asked about the ownership line, and Mike Moreno is tied into this. It you know, there's like a direct tie with Southern Equine and how the horse came, you know, into the ownership profile that you've got. I don't know if Mike's got a you know, has retained any you know, quiet interest in here, but Diodoro assisted Marino in the acquisition of the colt.
Yeah, it's a case, you know, where an owner will raise a stallion, and again, like we were talking with Larry Best, he's raised, you know, he's had his horses like Instagram and We're Waiting and that Arch horse's name escapes me, the Grade One winner. And then they want to breed to them. So in the case of Keep Me in Mind, of course, that colt was raised by Southern Equine, right? And so Southern Equine sent the mare to the horse they raised, and they got Laoban. So, you know, I don't know, again, how Moreno might be tied into this thing, but certainly in the case of how the horse was bred, you can see the, you can connect the dots. Southern Equine raced Laoban, and Southern Equine then bred Laoban's son, Keep Me in Mind, in still regard is that horse, by the way. In still regard for best. You know, it kind of reminds me of this same weekend. If you saw the that race on the West Coast, Fluffy Sox.
Mm-hmm.
Fluffy Sox is by the very obscure Slumber. Slumber, if you recall, was a horse that had been brought over from Europe and was raised by Saul Kumin's, one of his stable names in partnership with, I guess, Bethlehem and Dub. And he won the Manhattan G1, right? And
oh, that's
Slumber
true.
Then Slumber went to stud at Calumet. Fluffy Sox is the only winner, I think, for Slumber, but certainly the only, you know, stakes winner. Look who owns Fluffy Sox, Head of Plains Partners, Saul Kumin, also the breeder. So, again, a situation where somebody raced that horse and said, hey, you know what, I'll breed a mare to the horse I raced. And, you know, in that case, again, there's some success there. So, you know, a lot of times, Steve, this is a pattern which somebody races a nice horse, and they, if they're not in breeding before, they may say, you know what, I'm going to breed a few mares, or I'm going to breed a mare, something to the stallion I raced. And so starts the next chapter in a breeding enterprise.
You know, it's funny you bring up Fluffy Sox from, you know, the weekend, the 2-year-old races out west. There was also you had another kind of odd 2-year-old winner out there, Beer Can Man, for Little Red Feather and Mark Glatt, a Can the Man product, Beer Can Man. But there's an odd harmony to Fluffy Sox when you mention Slumber, because Slumber is a product of Judmont. And right, that was a Milsey. I see the Millsack, and you know, you only have to look at the rest of that female family, and it's got it's all Judmont. And so,
Kachit, the sire, out of Hasili.
Yep.
Daniel Hasili. You know, Bank Hill, all that.
You bet.
So, and Kachit, however you pronounce it, I believe he was a fairly successful sire in Europe, but he was plagued by fertility problems and did get Slumber. Slumber has now come here, and he's at, you know, Calumet, which collects some oddball types, oddball in the sense of the commercial aspects of stuff. You know, they'll stand Bala Bali, horses that a lot of places might not stand, but they're preserving some bloodlines. And that's the line of that horse. That's the pedigree. The other one, Beer Can Man by Can the Man, interesting again, because Can the Man at Spendthrift, a young son of Into Mischief, stood cheap. Now, a lot of Into Mischiefs are going to stud. And, he's got golden sense. But just like we've been talking about Tappet with his son's Constitution, and now Frosted, prior to that, he had Tapazar, the sire of Monomoy Girl. Tapazar has since been sent to Japan for 2021. But these major stallions, Tappet, we talked about Uncle Mo with his three sons and Laoban, Into Mischief is going to be the next you know, Meg Thee Stallion with a lot of sun, Golden Sense, of course, already successful. He's going to have Authentic, obviously, his big son at Spencer's. He's got Audible at Windstar. He's got a bunch of young sons, the two I mentioned for Larry Best. But, you know, he's got other ones at Spencer's and other farms as well. So, you know, that's basically what happens. A dominant sire usually gets the opportunity to have a chance to become the sire of sires because so many of his sons will go to Sutton. And so I think in the next few years, we're going to see, you know, quite a few Into Mischief Stallions start to, you know, hit. In fact, I think for one of your mares that we recommended, Instagram, I think, and some Into Mischief horses as well. So, you know, he's the next big stallion that people are going to be looking for to continue the line with his sons.
Well, I'm glad we actually added the turf winners as well as the dirt winners at Churchill. I'm glad we got those Del Mar players in, and for those since Cacique came up, I'm sure when I get a chance after the show, I'll send out either the Man of War or. Bobby Frankel got him when he came, of course, to the U.S. and He won. I know he won the Man of War, and he may have won a UN or something else significant too. And then he absolutely disappointed in the Breeders' Cup that year after coming in and running really well in a series of races, I remember.
Yeah.
And then bombed in the Breeders' Cup. And that was actually at the point that might have still been when Bobby was, you know, building up that over 33 in the Breeders' Cup and until Squirtle Squirt. Cacique was, you know, one of those Judmont imports that Frankel you know, had so much success with. You mentioned the Banks Hill and Intercontinental, and oh my God, there's so many. Well, Sid, this was tremendous.
Intermission, by the way, also has Baffert's latest horse, Life Is Good.
Well, on the strength, I guess, on the strength of Authentic, suddenly Into Mischief is a, I guess, a can't miss classic stallion, because 5-1 on the Derby future wager.
Yeah, exactly. And he's going. I see he's going to go the Authentic route in the Sham on January 2nd.
Yep.
Next.
Well, Sid, this was terrific, and we will remind people that you got to get in touch with Sid for your mare decision-making. Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. One more time, 510-490-1111. You'll get working on your mare compatibility analysis. And I also said, important to remind everybody, take a second here while we wait for Kevin Kilroy to join us. Remind everybody and explain to them the importance of registering the stallion.
Yeah.
Right?
Please do. Yeah, thank you. If you have a new stallion, make sure he's on enrolled with the Enix, because people can then run free NIC ratings of their mares with that stallion. If he's not on, we have a facility called a mare match facility where you put your mare's name in, and it gives you the best NICs for that particular mare. Now, if your stallion is not in Enix, of course, he won't show up. So it's a nice feature, and a lot of times we get people calling up saying, you know, this horse didn't show up, da-da-da. Well, you know, the horse hadn't been registered yet, so I do want to remind stud farms and stallion owners to do that. Also, with the small opportunity, I'd like to. Francis Karen told me that one of your avid listeners, Al Baril, from Twitter, had asked about me, so I wanted to give him a shout out and tell him, no, I have got rumored that I've gone to TikTok. Is that true?
That's great.
Thanks, Al, for your comments.
So you won't be doing any of those coordinated, you and Cece, no coordinated dance vids or anything?
Yeah, no, nothing like that.
I love it. Sid Fernando, everybody, and Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And Sid, we'll look forward to talking
next
week.
Yep.
You got
Thank
it. You. Thanks a lot. We'll stay right here, and we've got a busy hour and 15 minutes yet on this Wednesday get-together. I mentioned Steve Asmussen, likely to visit, and confirmed. Steve's going to visit, not so much to talk about Nitrous's win or Carriere, nice performance, but if you didn't see Steve Asmussen's piece at TDN, Steve talking about some circumstances in terms of cost-saving maneuvers by racetracks to limit training hours and training days, and Steve kind of speaking out and saying this is not good for the racehorse. And if you haven't seen it, be sure to pull it up from TDN. I'll send out the link to it. So Steve Asmussen's going to visit, and Seth Merrow. And, of course, I told you earlier, I want Seth to reminisce a little bit about Scarborough Downs. Not only did we lose Calder, but the Scarborough from the landscape, and in New England, the racing situation in New England is really, you can't even call it precarious. I mean, right now it's moribund. We've got to, get whatever format there's going to be for a potential equine sport facility in Massachusetts. Whatever, I haven't really heard any new developments on that front. And I like to think that some things wasn't lost on people yesterday when I put up the picture. I always put a couple of pictures up to accompany the listing of guests, and with Chip Bock being on and with Bobby Newman remembering Calder, I found a great old postcard of Calder from the 70s and the artist rendering of the new turfway. And it's sort of a reminder we've lost, we lost Calder. You're going to have a brand spanking new Northern Kentucky facility that'll sustain racing in the region, for time going forward. So I tried to juxtapose the loss of one with the renewal of the other, from Latonia to Turfway to now a new Turfway as soon as things stabilize regarding the HHR equipment in Kentucky. We'll turn from Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, to the NHC. And there was a really fun story kind of under the radar over the weekend, and that was Kevin Kilroy's qualification. And it was made, it's nice every week, there's another half dozen, some weeks more than others that qualify for NHC. And of course, it's going to have to wait until August to go to Vegas. But the storyline that was, to me, really fun was Kevin's involvement in what came to be known as Foregate, last year. And Kevin joins us. Kevin, congratulations.
D,
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and I really appreciate being on your show. It's an honor.
This was really great because, you know, the contest and horse playing community had a lot of mostly had a lot of fun. I think the vast majority when Fourgate happened, and you know, there was seven, right? There were seven people that utilized the four to great success that in that contest, and then we came up with a play down that worked out very well, actually. But I thought this was great because it just shows that you know, the fact that you went through, you know, the nuts and bolts handicapping, and it kind of proves that, you know, that a lot of the players that were involved in that circumstance, they just threw that together under, you know, just to be involved that day. It didn't mean that they weren't serious horse players.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for anybody who doesn't remember, it was seven of us who picked all four for the free tournament. And, you know, there's about 2,000 people who play in that free tournament. And I would still argue that just picking irrationally or, you know, lottery numbers or all one numbers might be the best strategy for a 2,000-person tournament and trying to score a, you know, 170 or 180 on a 12, you know, 12 card day. And then, yeah, they made all seven of us battle again a couple weeks later, which was so exciting and so thrilling. And, you know, I'm proud to say I did win that one too. But I did not do the best in the NHC. That goes on to a couple other people. So, you know, I'm excited to get back to that NHC and prove my worth there where it really matters.
Well, talk a little bit too about your background and your, you know, your interest in the game.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I'm an educator and a writer, and, you know, my interest in the game, you know, comes about 10 years ago where, you know, my manager, I was working at a pizza joint in Chicago. My manager, he's from Louisville. And so he took us out to Arlington Park one day, me and my buddy Dave. So that's James and Dave and I. And, you know, we just caught the fever pretty quick for horses. And a lot of it comes from I'll never forget, we had what we considered our insider. We had this guy named Matt Lehman who would give us tips, and we thought that was just the best. He would say, you know, Chris Block, you know, trainer Chris Block, you can't lose this race, you know, or Mark Guidry's on a horse, you know, the guy never loses. And he gave us one tip, the first one, it was Y7. I'll never forget the horse thing, Y7. And we, you know, we won like $200 or $300 that day and just never looked back. So, you know, I would go to Arlington and Hawthorne all the time, and then when horse players, when the show was on, that was just like, oh, that was the time when I was really trying to make a push and trying to make some money from, you know, from this passion of mine. And, you know, I started playing tournaments, and that was like, I guess that was like 7 years ago, 6 years ago. And in the first tournament I ever played in, you know, I finished like 10th or 9th or something like that. And I was like, okay, I can do this. You know, I can get there. And of course, I started pushing money through it and didn't get there, right? So I just kept in with the free tournaments over the years, and that kept me in it. And, you know, I grew a little bit, cynical about, you know, not cynical, just a little bit jaded about, being able to have a big day on those free tournament days, you know, with so many people running, so many people competing. And, so, you know, I got to the point where I just like, all right, all fours, here we go. No time to think about it. You know, I've got four kids. It was my fourth kid was on the way. I liked a couple of the four horses that day and picked all four, you know, and it worked out. But, you know, all of it's brought me just deeper into the game and, you know, deeper into the tournament world for sure. But I only played free tournaments this year. So this was my first one that I actually paid. And the reason I played this one was that it was a live tournament. I've gotten the pick and praise just aren't quite as appealing, aren't quite as exciting as playing the live tournament. So this was a great opportunity to play one of these qualifiers and do it in a live tournament.
Well done. Well done. And I went poking around to find the, you know, some of the original stuff because, you know, the hashtag Fourgate and you had the saddle cloth made, right? I'm trying to find that picture.
No, it wasn't me. I forget our partner's name, who did that. I just haven't thought back about those times. It was such a crazy year. Yeah, someone had a set of cloth made, and I believe he was the one who actually scored the highest in the NHC and got to take it home with him. So that was a pretty cool thing.
It was. I remember I put the picture up, and I'll find it. It's in my timeline somewhere, and it's probably actually in my phone. I'll be able to dig it out. Yeah. But right, but you don't live in Chicago now, though, right? You're in KC.
That's right. Yeah, about 5 years ago, I moved to Kansas City, which is which is the city I was born and raised in. So no horse racing around here, which is difficult and has me dreaming for living in other cities, that's for sure.
I had my time in Kansas City and got there. Oh yeah, I got there in September of 84 from Cincinnati. I was with Procter & Gamble, and
to come to Kansas City.
It was a great time to come. Well, the Royals they ran into a buzzsaw against the Tigers that year, but I ended up I got a half season plan at the stadium, and
really?
Yeah, the next year and was there for saw close to the 40 games and saw three of the four World Series games, and.
Oh, no.
It was really special.
I'm sure you experienced that.
Yeah.
I came back in 2015, right in time for the Royals winning it, 30 years
unbelievable.
Later. And, it's hard to describe the excitement in the city that year and going to the games and just all the bars. And, people just kind of kept on hoping we would lose so they could get back to their regular lives and stop drinking and eating well every day. But that was a party in the streets, and we had the Chiefs last year, and hopefully again this year. It's a good time to be in Kansas City, that's for sure.
I didn't get a chance to do it more than once, but went up to Exarban, and I had a friend come in, my buddy Phil, and we were big racing fans, and we drove up to Omaha and took in a day at Exarban, and I'm so glad I did it. I mean, it's the only time I got to go. And then after I left Kansas City, I went to Charlotte, but that you had the down in the flatlands there, they had the Woodlands, right? That they built.
Woodlands, which I only went to growing up one day, and it was the day that they did the wiener dog races. It was Mother's Day, and my mom loved, we had dachshunds, and my mom loved them, so I took her out there for a Mother's Day, and that was the only time I went to Woodlands, so I got close to catching on to horses at that point, but still, it took a few more years before I got
into it. I love it. Talk a little bit about your handicapping method and the way you approach races.
Yeah, definitely. I'm pretty simple. I got complicated in my method when I was getting ready for the NHC, and maybe overly so, I don't know. Using stats race lens and time form combined with, I always use DRF PPs and as much as possible all the aspects of Formulator for keeping the race notes when I'm deep into it. I do well with that. But, I'm just always looking for angles. For the tournament, what really worked well for me this past Saturday was just keying into a couple of horses that had good trainer angles and had competitive speed figs and good workouts, like the Cat Horse Meal Ticket. That horse had, what was it? It was like a 30% trainer rate for going from, Meal Ticket, sorry, I'm thinking of Kansas Kiss. Meal Ticket had 20% for blinkers off for Jeff Mullins. And, the speed figs were about 5 below the the best, and 45-1. That was a horse that was not my pick going into the day. But as the day was going forward, it was obvious I was down about 30 points, so I needed to play something that was going to get me back towards the lead, because I hit Kansas Kiss right off the bat, and that horse had from sprint to route 30% trainer rate and a bullet work out of 240 horses at the beginning of November after a long like 4 months on the shelf. For handle, and it just seemed like that was a horse that was definitely a good tournament play. Although whether it was that Chad Brown horse that was, I don't know if it was 1-5 or 2-5, and was running 90 buyer figs, so that was an easy one to toss out in a tournament. That would have been a hard one to toss out, just playing on a regular day. So I'm always looking for this angle. You know, blinkers on, blinkers off works really well for me when it comes in. It's never a consistent way to actually make money, but in tournaments, it's an angle that I really like. Makes me think of Storm the Court, who had the great Breeders' Cup success a few years ago. Racing on Saturday, and hasn't done quite as much as they would like that horse to do, but that blinkers on was a big move, I think, for that horse to win the juvenile that day. I'm just always looking to combine it all. I think it's such a great, intellectual endeavor where you've got the ability to sort of be your own computer, where you're combining all these data points, whether it's the bias feed figures or the trainer numbers or, the distance that the horses run or what sort of form they're in, all those sort of things. And you just try to mix that all together and come with your best guess in your own particular way. And I'm not going to lie, I do love a good hunch every once in a while, too. The fact that Kansas Kiss was, I'm in Kansas City, born in Kansas, or, raised in Kansas, helped me to love that horse a little bit more. What was the other one that was running that day? But then, Las Tetas was running that day, who also ran on the day that I won the NHC officially, and it did not win. So, the hunches, they come and they go, right, in terms of how the horse name sort of maybe pushed me to bet, which is a fun thing, too, especially something I love about the tournaments, because you just have to be able to be a little bit, you've got to be a lot of creative in your thinking, right? And so it helps just to be a little bit outside the box, and names can kind of push you in that way, in a direction that's irrational, that aren't going to be the same reason that, another 100 people are going to pick that horse because they don't have that same sort of connection. So I love that, and I also love that sort of old school, people hanging out at the track. I got a chance to go to a lot of OTBs in Chicago back in the day, and I love betting with those types of people who are there, playing it for their own reasons, bringing their trinkets to the table with them, and ringing their bells or whatever the things that they have, that bring them luck. All that stuff is just a great part of humanity that I love. So I love that old grandpa style of picking by name too.
Well, obviously you're putting more into it than just random selections. When it comes to building tickets, you mentioned the point about live money, and one of the real challenges for a lot of players when it comes to $2 win place, the mythical approach, versus bankroll play.
Yeah.
When you're playing yourself in a non-contest arena, what are your preferable approaches? What kind of go-to bets?
Mostly I'll just play within the race, play win exacta. If I really see the race well, I'll play the trifecta. I try to play the horizontal bets, and I just haven't had much luck. I haven't had much luck at all. Back when I would play at Hawthorne and really follow it closely, I could do better. I think you kind of have to have maybe that week in, week out, paying attention to the track and to the horses and the circuit really well to do well with those horizontals. But when a race opens up for you and you see what's going on and you can tell the pace, how it's going to unfold, and all those sort of ways, or at least you have a strong opinion. It makes it easy to pick that exact, makes it easy to understand how the trifecta might come forward and try to build some value there. But for the most part, I'm in the vertical races or the vertical bets and the win place, or sorry, just win bets from there.
Well, you mentioned circuit. What do you keep to a certain circuit? I mean, one of the things about contest play that's notable is that you very frequently have to, go into a spot that you don't necessarily play, and into parts of the country, and that it can be a challenge. That there's an intimidation factor of looking at a circuit that isn't necessarily in your rotation.
Yeah, and that's a tough thing for, A, being a Chicago player, and then, now in Kansas City, sort of having no circuit that I'm tied to, at least geographically, is that with the NHC, the Arlington and Hawthorne just aren't part of it. And, you know, yeah, for the past 5 years, I kind of felt like, you know, a man without a home in terms of circuit. I love New Orleans, love the city. You know, it's one of my favorite places to be, so I like to pay attention to fairgrounds. You know, I'm excited that they just started running, and that's great. And so I guess, I kind of paid attention to fairgrounds and Oakland mostly getting ready for the NHC last year. And, you know, and that fared pretty well for me. If I remember back, you know, I had a few horses at those tracks. And, I'm wondering what we're going to do with August, you know, what the tracks are going to be, or if the NHC is going to announce what they'll be. You know, I got to assume that we've got Saratoga running then, right? We've got Del Mar is running then as well. Is that right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
Ellis Park.
Okay. So yeah, it's nice that it's, you know, I've got what, you know, 9 months, 8 months to get ready, so I can start working at it. Because as you know, as everybody knows who's probably listening to this, it takes a lot of work to get ready for that NHC. And
yeah,
it was really fun doing that first one because I was just, you know, I mean, I just didn't know what to expect. I was just as excited as a little kid, you know, and just going to Vegas and, you know, thinking about horses all the time and having the excuse, you know, to my wife and kids be like, hey, I gotta look at the horses, you know, they're like, okay, he's trying to win $1 million. He can do that today. And so I was, you know, I was ready to go and I got out there and I just worked the whole time. You know, I'd go out for little walks here and there and, but I overworked. I'd stayed up till 2 or 3 a.m. and, only got, you know, 5 hours of sleep or something like that. And didn't get my regular run-in in the morning and all those sort of things. And so I think the key is just, you know, having done more work beforehand, having watched more races, more trip notes, all those things that you can just build into it. You know, if you do slow and steady work leading up into it, will be key for this for the second one and get a good night's sleep and all that sort of stuff. But I tell you what, you can't beat it. I'll never forget sitting, you know, in my Treasure Island hotel and having the strip just lights and you know, noise just going crazy out there and just being laser focused inside, just looking at past performances and working hard while everybody's partying out there. You know, it's a great combination. I love that environment. Like, you know, I'd love to go every year for the rest of my life. That'd be a good life if I could do that.
Well, it's infectious, and everybody that gets that gets to Vegas after that they have that same, you know, that same essence of you know, wanting to get back, and you know, then when you look at, you know, the group of players that, you know, have made 10, yeah, 12, 15 NHCs, I mean, it's remarkable, and looking forward to this year with the, you know, the summer schedule is going to be, it's going to be very different. There's no doubt. And there's been a very good reception. And on this topic, while Kevin Kilroy is with us, and Kevin, a couple of years ago, part of the Fourgate incident, the great story, but now has qualified free and clear. He's been able to put it past, and can't be included in that conversation anymore. A couple of things about NHC, because I said at the beginning of the show this morning, with the August date, there's, you know, kind of an out of sight, out of mind mentality. However, January 23rd is still the cutoff.
Right.
January, it's not, you know, we're not going to have qualification opportunities, you know, into, you know, deeper into the year. The 2022 NHC final is going to start. So keep that in mind. The dates again, August 27th, 28th, 29th at Bally's. Winter Challenge starts Friday and goes to the 23rd. There's a special, you know, kind of a winter contest here with prizes of $4,000, $2,500. This is on horse players, and top five finishers on that front. There's going to be a top 75 leaderboard as well, which is going to be for people that have not yet qualified for 2021's final. And the top 75 overall points leaders at the end of the tour season on that special leaderboard will get to Vegas. So be aware, we got these next couple of days before this starts on Friday. There's a lot of cool things that are folding into this late season qualification opportunity, and I'll keep feeding these out this weekend. Be aware, you've got Lone Star and Monmouth have on track opportunities on Saturday, and Naira's got an online, by the way, I should mention, $500 buy-in on Saturday, the Cigar Mile Challenge, as well for Naira Bets customers on Saturday. Plenty of things to be aware of here as we get into essentially the last 8 weeks of the tour season for the NHC. So, Kevin,
that makes me think of a quick COVID story. You know, our plan every Thanksgiving we go to my wife's just from west of Chicago, and we go to her family and hang out. So we were going to go up there and go to Batavia to her sister's house, and you know, they decided not to, you know, with everything that's going on. But my whole plan was like, all right, let's get up there. And, you know, Thanksgiving on Thursday and Friday, I'm going to be at Hawthorne. You know, I'm going to be at Hawthorne for the live tournament. And, you know, I'm going to try to win my seat right there. So I've had that sort of pegged for a while. And then, you know, we canceled our trip up there, and Hawthorne canceled their live tournament. So it was a great excuse to play in one at home, play in the Horse Players one. I was supposed to try to do it at the track.
Al, and you know, for a number of years, that was one of the for Nick Tamaro. That was Nick, I think, has qualified, I think, three times at Hawthorne. And who else? The Maven too. Dave Goodfriend has got there. There's one Lo Sal. A good friend is, I think, has gone out to Lo Sal, I think, maybe three straight years and qualified, if I'm not mistaken. It's very funny. There's certain. I don't know if it's a mindset or what, you know, what happens.
Right. Environment. Horses, you know.
Yeah, and time of the year and whatever it might be. Well, Kevin, absolutely thrilled for you, and
thank you.
Continued success. Happy holidays, and won't see you until August, unless we run into you at a track somehow. If there's a place that along the way, Triple Crown season or something that well done. I know I follow you.
To get out there.
Well, I know I follow you on Twitter. You're not a big Twitterer though.
No, you know, Twitter's just it becomes a tough place to be, right? There's a lot going on Twitter.
Yeah.
Instagram's on Instagram, it's at Kevin Kilroy KC. That's one L in Kilroy. And post a little bit more there for sure. But I'm definitely following you both those spots, and I'll see you there, and I'll see you in August. Can't wait, Steve. I really appreciate being on the show. Thank you for it.
Oh, a lot of fun. Kevin Kilroy, everybody. Kilroy was here on the show, actually. I love it. I'm going to have to check out kevinkilroy.org, right? You've got...
You know what? My
that's your writing?
My latest book just came out here a month ago. It's called The Chicago Window, and it's kind of a neo-noir story. It looks at... you know, those old neighborhoods of Chicago, Wicker Park and Logan Square, Ukrainian Village, and all the sort of stuff that was happening there in the early 2000s. It's got a detective story in there. It's got an artist and a developer working in cahoots. It's got some escapees from a local asylum running around the neighborhoods. It's a fun one. Yeah, Chicago Window just came out last month.
Outstanding. I'll send me the link if you would, and I'll text you, you know, either email or text. I'll text you, and let's get that out there. Perfect time.
Thank you.
Not at all. We sell, you know, the our listenership buys a ton of books. It's always amazing. Whenever there's an author on, I always hear back from them. They're like, I can't believe what we sold. So I'm glad I asked. Kevin Kilmer.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
And I gotta admit that this is all working towards a book. So hopefully, I'm
excellent.
Aiming to write the Positively Fifth Street of the NHC. You know, like Dick Manis's awesome book about the World Series of Poker. So this is all hopefully adding up to that.
Well done. Kevin Kilroy, everybody. Kevin Kilroy KC on Instagram, too. We'll take a break here, and Steve Asmussen is going to visit and talk about the piece that he wrote, a letter to the editor kind of a piece at TDN, and expressing some frustration with some racetrack policies. And we'll get Seth Merrill in here, too. Got about 40 minutes to fill out on what's been a busy Wednesday. Back after this with Steve.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions.